Oh.
Is it more?
It's my
this is my ass.
Oh.
Where am I supposed to sit? Yeah.
This is here.
I'm going to take this chair.
Well, our first order of business today is a superintendent presentation. And for those who aren't familiar, we try, House Education Committee, every beginning of every meeting, we try to have a 15-minute presentation from one of the superintendents around the state so we can become familiar with the what's going well, what the challenges are. And I'd like to thank Bruce Johnson for making all this happen. He's the facilitator in this. And today we have a movie. Usually we have a PowerPoint presentation. Representative Wilson.
Eddie. Are we going to still have questions?
Yes, they wanted to see the movie.
Okay. So
Lieutenant Todd Pogue from Lasky Gateway and Toke. Superintendent Pogue, are you there?
I am here, Chairman Dick.
Hey, good morning. If you wouldn't mind to just begin, introduce your video and state your name and affiliation for the record, and go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Chairman Dick and House Education Committee members. My name is Todd Pogue. I'm the superintendent of the Alaska Gateway School District. I've been the superintendent for the past 5 years. I actually graduated from Nome Belt, and I have 24 years experience in education all in Alaska. This morning we have a short video that highlights some of the programs the district began over the past 4 years, mostly utilizing stimulus and educational grant funds. I can guarantee you three things. We're not going to win any Academy Awards for this presentation. Each of us that put a section of this video together knows 100% more about iMovies than we did last week. And this iMovie is definitely more interesting than the PowerPoint presentation that Chairman Dick has already seen at a community meeting in Tope. We did have a little fun learning about creating iMovies, and sometimes that is what education is all about. Bruce Johnson, I'm not sure if he's in the audience, but he said I had a 10-minute time slot, and this video uses much of that time. So if we can roll the iMovie, I believe we're on take 56 of the House Education Committee presentation. Thank you.
Roll them.
Good morning, House Education Committee members. Thank you for taking the time this morning to learn about a few of the educational practices within Alaska. This 8-minute video will highlight some of the initiatives.
We have paused?
Yeah, she has to slide it over.
The speakers were set up before, and now they're not.
I can't see
it.
Slide the speaker thing
up. Have a little space.
Over, see,
up.
Over.
On the bottom.
On the bottom, you can turn it up a little.
No, clear over to
your
right.
Right.
To your
right.
Yeah, clear to the right.
Your right.
The button. No.
Not too far.
There you go.
Right here.
Right
there.
Yeah.
Well, I have to get that.
Let's
start it. There it goes.
Oh,
you're working. All right. It'll be really loud now.
Implementing during the past 4 years. We hope you'll enjoy this time with us.
There were speakers, and when I left the room this morning, someone.
Okay.
We moved the speakers.
Sorry. Can we back up, though?
Yeah.
We want to hear the whole thing.
The Alaska Gateway School District encompasses 28,000 square miles.
Sorry. This is not my specialty.
It's located in the eastern interior of Alaska.
Please do.
District serves approximately 400 students in 7 communities.
Yeah.
Just click. Should be able to click on the slider here. Yeah. Slide it back.
How did they remove the speakers?
Good morning, House Education Committee members. Thank you for taking the time this morning to learn about a few of the educational practices within the Alaska Gateway School District. This 8-minute video will highlight some of the initiatives the district has been focusing on or implementing during the past 4 years. We hope you'll enjoy this time with us.
The Alaska Gateway School District encompasses 28,000 square miles located in the eastern interior of Alaska. The district services approximately 400 students in 7 communities with extreme weather conditions. Distances between the central office in Tok and outlying schools ranges from 12 to 173 miles. All schools are on the road system. The average low temperature in January is 32 below zero. The average high during July is 72 degrees.
Over the past 4 years, the district has implemented a number of initiatives to enhance student learning opportunities, which include upgrading preschools in villages without a Head Start program, reinstating the music and counseling programs after more than a 5-year absence, establishing professional learning communities, implementing an instructional coach position, incorporating peer observations, creating teacher instructional grants, providing correspondence and college classes for students, implementing literacy blocks for language arts, and the continual development of energy-saving practices. The remainder of this video will highlight some of these programs.
Everything we do in Alaska Gateway School District, every program we have, is focused on providing the highest quality education we can to our students every single day. Many students in our district come from homes that are in poverty. Average per capita income is as low as $9,000 a year, and in many schools, 100% of the students are eligible for free and reduced lunch. Because of this, we are relentless in seeking funding that allows us to offer extra activities for our students. This includes after-school programs, pre-kindergarten programs, and learning demonstration projects, and summer reading. For students who are struggling, we increase instructional time, offer one-on-one tutoring, and provide off-site tutoring as well. We have vocational programs set up with the university, and our students are able to earn state certification as welders and mechanics. For advanced students, we have college coursework and participate in the Alaska Learning Network and other distance learning opportunities. We have had motivated students graduate with their high school diploma at the same time as they earned an associate's degree from the university. All of our teachers participate in professional learning community activities, and we directly involve our teacher leaders in the development of curriculum that is written locally and integrates cultural content and is based on Common Core standards.
I really enjoy having the iPads in class for all the students because, for one thing, everyone can be on KidBiz at one time. Before, we had to have certain days for each student, so now everyone can access it every day of the week if we want to. We've also used some of the apps such as Spellboard for spelling, which is a good one to individualize lists. The kids put in their own spelling words, they have to type them in, say them, and they create their own spelling test so that they can take a pre-test before a final test on Friday, which has been good practice. Another thing that we've used the iPads for are the, we have a fluency passage that we do each week, and the kids record and their passage and see the time that it took them to read it, and we do that at least twice a week so that they can see their growth and how quickly they can read the passage, which has been a real motivator for them and a real booster to have success in what they're doing.
As the only guidance counselor for the Alaska Gateway School District, I work with all students, kindergarten through high school. My home base is Tok School, the largest of the 8 schools in the district. From this base, I travel 2 days a week so that I can meet twice during the month with each student in the district. Puzzles help students understand my role as someone who can help them solve problems and put together pieces of information that give wholeness to the picture of their lives. In working with high school students, I use various videos and activities to help students practice employability skills. The Alaska Career Information System has been an especially helpful tool for both middle and high school students as I work with them in developing a post-high school career plan. My primary focus in working with elementary and middle school students is helping them develop skills that will enable them to respond appropriately to criticism, teasing, and bullying. Through video demonstrations and role-playing, the students observe and practice positive interpersonal skills. We often play a game I call Bank that reinforces the idea that the things they learn in school will one day put money in their pockets. I think that my job in our district is extremely important in helping our students realize success not only in school, but also in their lives. As the itinerant music teacher at Alaska Gateway School District, I work at 7 school sites. Each village school is visited once a week and has 2 or 3 music classes, depending on the size of the student body. One school is taught solely through video teleconferencing, and the largest school supports 2 bands and a choir. The AGSD music program educates children in the fundamentals of music and musical performance, and also through the use of dance, plays, and songs, teaches students the inherent connections between art and other core courses.
I love band!
This year, TOC became the first school in the country to bring online a cogen biomass facility to help address the problem of rising utility costs that plague our schools and take funds from the classroom. The biomass project helps to keep our communities safe from wildfire and is creating good local jobs. We broke ground in May of 2010 and brought the first phase of the facility online on time and in budget in January of 2011. In January of 2012, the steam turbine was brought online. The next phase of the project will be to heat greenhouses using the excess BTUs from the facility and implement an Arctic agriculture program in partnership with the university, where our students will participate in growing up to 20,000 pounds of our own vegetables that can be used in the district's food service program.
This year, the board sponsored a resolution to support 3-year forward funding of K-12 schools with a $320 increase to the base student allocation. This district request was based on the continued need to keep programs that are just plain and simple good for kids. Any support for additional funding the House Education Committee can provide is appreciated. Thanks for watching our presentation.
Well, Todd, I don't think Steven Spielberg feels the pressure yet, but that, really that was a wonderful presentation, and I would encourage Bruce Johnson to encourage other superintendents to do the same. That really was good. I bet you could use that if you're trying to recruit teachers. I bet there isn't a teacher around that wouldn't want to be part of your school district. Yes, questions from committee. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Todd, this is Peggy Wilson, and I used to live in TOC, and we didn't have roads to every school. Does Tetlin have a road to the school now?
That is correct, Representative Wilson. All schools have roads. Tetlin has a road. It's about a 30-mile road. It's over rough terrain. It's probably the worst road in the district. And Eagle has a road also, but it closes during the winter months.
Well, that's wonderful. That's exciting. That's exciting to hear.
And just for further information, we do have teachers that live in TOC that commute to Tetlin every single day.
Wow, and they used to have to live there. So that's...
Yeah, we still probably have the same housing that was out there when you were here. I know it's the same housing, actually.
there wasn't electricity, if I remember.
Any other question from committee? Excuse me, Todd, we do need to move on, but I promise I'll try to make copies of this and make it available to everybody, including that latter portion where about your request from the House, you're certainly not alone. And my vision, when I imagine superintendents across the state, I always think about the Star Wars movie where Luke Skywalker and Chewbacca and Princess Leia were in the trash compactor, and the walls are moving, closing in from all sides, and that's my visual image of superintendents. They're getting crushed from every direction, so as much as we can advocate for you, sir, we will. So thank you, Superintendent Polk, and we will move on. I do know that we have... plan was to have Chairman Cox of the State Board of Education follow up, but now that we have the Regent Powers and the folks from the university, would you want to come forward and answer questions again? I thank you for being here. We're a little maybe less formal in this committee. We're kind of a little bit free flowing, but. Any questions of the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On slide, 3, I guess, is where we'd be looking at, or page 3, anyway, where we're looking at about 200 graduates per year. The question I have is, is the program limited by the number of students that apply? Is it limited by the number of courses that are offered? Or and why do you think that it's 200 if only that number of students apply? Is it because of the duration for graduation for those jobs that if you're in a five-year program, it's difficult, and if that 5 year stretches beyond 5 years, it's extremely difficult. And I guess in coordination with that, the number of people that come into the program, what's our dropout rate? Well, I mean, we always look at it in K-12, and I want to know what is kind of your dropout rate in the teacher prep.
So, the 200 numbers.
Right. Through the chair, with the 200 number, I would say that a significant limitation is students wanting to become educators. And even before that, students making it out of high school and deciding to go to college. So we have that limitation. Our programs have grown. You know, there's been ebbs and flows, but I think probably our biggest limitation would be who's actually wanting to come through the door. In terms of the non-completion, I would have to defer to Dean Lowe.
So just to follow up on Mr. Chairman.
Oh.
So the class, there's space in the classes. It's not that some of the prerequisite or the courses that are needed through the through the progression of courses aren't limited, and then somebody gets out of sequence, so then they're going to be in the next year instead of being able to take those courses. That has not been a problem in the teacher education program, is what you're telling me.
Through the chair, my understanding is no, it's not like our nursing program where there are students who end up having to wait for a year in order to enroll in the core classes. It is, and again, I think Dean Lowe could speak to that for UAS, but I have not heard of any concern about students not being able to get into courses. There is the limitation of students not passing the Praxis 1, so not being able to begin their teaching, but I think that's much less of a problem than it has been in the past. And frankly, we don't always know, because students may take the Praxis 1 before applying to be formally admitted into the program. And if they take it and they haven't turned in their test scores and they haven't formally applied, we don't know if that's something that's a barrier or not.
I do have maybe more of a request than a question. As I was speaking with Dr. Chip McMillan from UAS, and I've known Tim for quite a while. He's helped me with the Village Science you referred to. He helped me edit some of that, and he kept me out of trouble. So I've known Dr. McMillan for quite a while. And we had supper together a couple nights ago, and he talked about the changes in the university system. That is to say that as we sit here in the Education Committee, most of our focus is on K-12 and how we can get those guys heading your direction. I also understand that what's happening within the university system is changing. And, you know, if I could use the analogy, if a bull caribou ran across and I squeezed off a shot, I might hit him. But if my bullet takes 5 years to get there, I may or may not hit him because I don't know where he's going to be. We're trying to aim students in your direction. But I understand that what's happening within the university system in terms of, you know, online courses and everything is changing. So if you don't keep us posted, we could be heading students in the absolute wrong direction. So I say that by way of request, that please keep us informed here as to what's happening. Because when I picture college in my mind, I started in 63 and finished up in 79, so I'm a little bit outdated. So if you would help us in that regard so we can head send kids to where you're going and not where you were. Okay?
Mr. Chair, in specific response to Representative Seaton, I think we can get those numbers for you about the persistence of students in our program so we can follow up with you on that. But two areas I just wanted to mention where we have seen issues of capacity. One has been in special education, where we have, with your support, made additional investments. Last year, for example, the legislature approved funding for UAS to receive to hire an additional special education faculty member, and we've done that. And so as you look at the SB 241 report, you'll see where investments in recent years have led to significant increases in the number of graduates from our special education program. So those investments are, in fact, paying off. We also do have a request this year from UAS for an elementary education faculty member with a focus on literacy, and so that's pending before the legislature currently. So these are areas where investments have made a difference, and we continue to need to make investments to keep up with the demand that we see there.
Yeah. Follow up?
So I appreciate those answers because that really helps us. So there is a constraint on teacher prep or teacher throughput through the university in elementary ed at UAS, and that's a position that would alleviate that bottleneck. Is that my understanding?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, the university does tons of wonderful things, and you're hearing us kind of complain, and you know we know that you do great wonderful things, and so I don't want you to feel bad when you leave here that we aren't appreciating you because we really do. And this is my 12th year on the education committee, and some of the questions keep being asked over and over and over every year, and we don't necessarily hear the responses. So it's, you know, for instance, one thing that I have been really asking every year, this is the fifth year I've asked this question now, the question I ask is, some of the teaching methods, or not methods maybe what you are teaching is changing? You can be a professor and teach the same class in the same way to every class every year for 20 years. And, you know, obviously with changing times and things, we can't do that. We've learned a lot of research now on the brain and what how kids think and how they don't learn under stress and how many kids and families nowadays are under stress. And my question was, are we starting to teach the upcoming teachers when how to teach under those circumstances? Simple things like if a child is used to having dad come home, and when they hear that car door slam, they know that they better get away from the door. Because that's, you don't want to be around the door when dad comes home because you might get hit, yelled at, whatever, and or whoever it might be. And so that child feels the most comfortable the furthest from the door is possible. So when you're in that classroom, you don't set that child by a door. You set that childhood or that child clear back in a corner where they feel the safest. I mean, it's things like that that are we teaching our teachers to go out into the world and be able to deal with some of the things that our kids are really dealing with today. Parents on drugs, parents, you know, it doesn't matter where they're from, that's all over the state. And because we're number one in a lot in domestic violence and number one in suicide, and, you know, are we teaching teachers how to identify maybe the signs of a possible suicide, you know. That's never, ever been answered for me. Every year I ask it, and never does anybody say anything about that. And I want to know, are we starting to teach our teachers those kind of things? And I mean, that's really important to me, and I think to new teachers that are coming up the line.
Representative Wilson, Dean Lowe, would you?
Please, I'm sitting here going, me.
Excuse me, please come up and identify yourself just for the recorder's sake.
Hi. I'm Deborah Lowe. I'm the Dean of Education at UAS, and I can speak to UAS, and I think I can speak for my colleagues at UAS and UAA as well. I'm very loud. I don't need the microphone.
But the recorder does.
It's recording. It's not amplifying them.
There you go.
Yes, the answer to your question is absolutely. And the way we do that, first, our faculty have to know. They have to have that information. And we are very careful to ensure that our faculty is always upgrading, always getting new information. They have an opportunity to attend conferences and training sessions, and we're very systematic about that. We're also very systematic about reviewing syllabi, what's in those syllabi. We have alignment grids with national standards, state standards, and I review them. So I know what's going on in my classrooms. And so, yes, we pay very careful attention to that.
Yay. Because those are things, see, that's why I feel it's important that the questions we ask this year, when you come back next year, tell us if you've improved or if you're doing some of those things or not. Because we hear the complaints, of course, you know, and not necessarily the happy things. We always hear the grumbling things. And so I've never ever heard since the university's been coming, as long as I've been here, anybody say anything about teacher in service and what the teachers are learning, or the professors. I've never heard that before, that they're learning things.
Right.
Well, that's great. I mean, we do that with our teachers, but are we doing it with our professors? And so that's really good news for me.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm a teaching dean, and I'm teaching an action research class this semester. I'm teaching teachers how to look at their classrooms, identify issues and problems, and do that cycle of research, you know, problem solve, find a solution, implement, reflect, look at your data, do it again. And so you're continually improving.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Follow-up.
Oh, I'm sorry, follow-up.
Sorry, one follow-up, and it follows on what Representative Seaton was asking. In the special ed classes, the science classes, and the math classes, are those classes all full? And I'm kind of puzzled a little bit. I know that you have to keep up, but why would you add to the elementary, when we're flooded with elementary teachers, why would you add staff there when we need to have more special ed in those areas? And is it that we just, are those classes not full?
We framed it as an elementary, but it's actually a literacy position. And that person will teach across the content areas. So there will be literacy and special education. We don't currently have on staff a literacy person who is dedicated to that, and it's so very, very important. We have a reading faculty, but she does graduate work mostly, and she does it in the graduate reading program. We need somebody beyond adjuncts and beyond people whose training and background is not in literacy to really anchor those courses and to make sure that all of that is taught and taught well, because reading is 75% of the game.
And just last one.
Promise?
Yes, I promise. Or for this round. I too think it's extremely important that about the four-year program. Mm-hmm. You know, if jiggle them around, make it so that they're 4 years, because people can't afford it nowadays, you know. And I know that gives the school more money if you can stretch it out, but we need it to be compacted so that I've had kids come to me and say, you know, the class wasn't available, so I couldn't take the class that I needed, you know. And so that's one thing that I think is extremely important. So,
well, I'm very proud, and I'm going to be a proud mama right now. We have a special ed undergraduate program. It'll be the first in the state in front of the statewide academic committee right now. And we worked and worked and worked, and we have it down to 120 hours. So it is an absolute four-year degree.
Good. Wonderful.
Also, I'd like to mention, I know Chairman Esther Cox is online, and Esther, we can never be accused of apathy here. We're running long on this one, and Esther, I do want to give you as much time, I know the committee has questions of you as well. If you want to continue online, you're certainly welcome, but I would like to schedule you again down the road where we can really give full attention to the concerns we had when we ran over on the meeting with you as well. So, Esther, if you want to stay in line, great. If you don't, feel free to go, and Annette will reschedule with you. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Dick, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, yes.
Oh, I don't mean to interrupt Representative Seaton, but if that's okay, I can reschedule, or Annette can let me know and reschedule. And I just want to say one thing to you. I really do thank you and appreciate the fact that when I was testifying on Friday, that you did interrupt someone who was testifying so that I could come on. I appreciated the courtesy because, as you understood, I was flying back home that day.
Well, we do try to, as we prioritize here, we do try to prioritize the folks that made the effort to be here and those that are online. So, okay, thank you, Esther, and we certainly do want to hear from you, and we don't want to limit the time the committee has with you. So thanks for understanding.
Okay.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had the Higher Education Task Force, and we also, this committee, identified that throughout the, whether it was K-12 or university, one of the most effective tools of getting graduation was an advisor advocate program for every student, and we made that a requirement for every institution accepting the Alaska Performance Scholarship must provide that. Are you providing an individual advocate advisor through this program of teacher education? I mean, I know that's where a lot of people get lost, and like Representative Wilson said, somebody couldn't, you know, they're in the program, they can't get a course. Well, they need to have an advisor advocate that they can go to, not just somebody they see once, but is there throughout their career that can say, oh, well, here's a workaround. You can take that through online course through UAF because they offer that, and you'll have to do it online, but it's not going to delay your graduation. You know, all of those things that are necessary, and nationwide we found, you know, all the data is that that's probably the most effective thing we can do. And I just want to make sure that that's incorporated into the teacher certification program at all the different branches of the university.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe that is the case in all of our three major administrative units. We heard the same concern last year about the importance of mandatory advising, sometimes even referred to as intrusive advising, to ensure that students, in fact, know how to access the services and have the support system in place. And I would say, in general, that only expands as you go further into a program like teacher education, because there's a very close personal connection between the faculty members and the staff working with their students in these programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I do have a question. I was really excited to be part of ICER because, and we met with President Gamble, and there was a I felt it was a very representative meeting, and you might remember the couple of the people that were at that meeting, Yayuk and Nita Reardon. I also introduced them to the committee here. I believe they're pretty significant people. And so I was very excited about that meeting so we can direct research, because to the best of my knowledge, there is no research in terms of what works best for Native Alaskan students. It doesn't exist yet. We've certainly got to focus some attention there, because we're always saying, well, we need research-based curriculum or pedagogy, and there, for 40 years we've never had any of that. So we're always going back to what is research-based, which is something that's just canned out of Lower 48. So, but if you would refresh me, Regent Powers, you mentioned there was like six focus, okay, of the of those of ICER. And while you're looking, here was my point. Diane, were you on the last audio conference? You were the one directing that.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess what I'm getting at is, as you read those, I was thinking, trying to reflect back on the audio conference. And what I heard in the audio conference was, everybody's picking, I'll be on that committee, I'll, you know, they'll be on that committee. Then all of a sudden, somebody said, let's change the whole paradigm, and then everybody wanted to be on that committee. And so if you'd read those, I think there were six possible committees under ICER. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
What page?
So page 19 of the report.
For the record, state your name, because there's two males up there.
Mike Powers.
Thank you.
Page 19 of the report talks about the CAPR advisory group meeting in October 2011, setting the following priorities. One, identify successful learning readiness models and why they're successful and what might be implemented accordingly. Two, to explain models for systemic change in education to serve all students, especially culturally and socially unique students at risk. Three, identifying successful models for preparing Alaska Native teachers, administrators and superintendents, and why they're successful and what might be implemented. Four, identifying successful educator and administrator retention models and why they might be successful. And finally, identifying indigenous language models that lead to successful learning.
Thank you for refreshing me. And Diana, refresh my memory of that audio conference. It seems to me that we're all picking and choosing, that all of a sudden when we talked about changing the current educational paradigm, everybody just lit up and everybody wanted to be a participant in that. I would just, would you care, if your memory is better than mine, would you care to elaborate on what the comments were during that audio conference?
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, in that audio conference, the original language was not quite what we've just read to you now. This reflects actually that December audio conference, because originally we were talking about what are ways of identifying at-risk students and serving them better. And during the audio conference, a couple of members of the committee said, you know, we need to start thinking outside the box. We need to actually say there's got to be a different way of doing this. And what does it look like to do something entirely different? And so now, of course, our struggle is how we actually act on that. We've got a list of people interested in being engaged in it. We actually, just last night, had a conversation about taking part of that group and working with Education Northwest, who received a renewal of the Regional Education Lab. And we've got, you haven't heard about this yet, but the Alaska Statewide Policy Research Alliance, which is something that we're going to be doing in partnership with the Department of Education, CAPR, and bringing on board the legislators and others to say, you know, how do we start moving towards systemic change in the state, and what is the way we get people to use research to do this? So this is going to be part of it. We also, Lexi Hill and I, have met with Dean Chesbrough, who has agreed to chair that subgroup, to think about, again, how do we, this is a really tough, complex, multifaceted question. So what do we bring to bear? Some of that is the research that Lexi and I are engaged in with others, looking at these models of change around the globe that are working with indigenous students, whether it's Greenland or Hawaii or New Zealand. And some of it is also asking what are some of the challenges, given what we're learning from that, in the way that our system is structured at present. And so we will be coming back to the group and starting to think about how do we move this ungainly task forward thoughtfully and informed by research.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Yes, on that point, so this is the educational policy research. Is this focusing on K-12? Is it focusing on students in the university? I mean, I'm not seeing any, maybe it's everybody in the world, but I'm not seeing any focus on it, either K-12 or university.
Right, and through the chair, Representative Seaton, that we are with very limited capacity at the moment, people-wise, trying to focus on everything. We actually have a number, in addition to these questions here, which really are broad questions brought to us by the advisory board, that we don't have specific research funding for. It was started with that startup money from the university. We have to go find more resources to support this. We are also doing work on the intersection between K-12 and higher education. Specifically, the Department of Education has hired us to work on the validity study for the new core content standards to find out whether a student who graduates high school having achieved these standards is indeed college and career ready. So that's a project we're launching this spring, which will be surveying faculty, not just in the UA campuses, but all over the state, AvTech, ILLISOG, VIC, APU, and so forth. We have Lexi Hill working with Community and Technical College on a federally funded grant that's around what you do for adults who've been displaced by jobs that have gone overseas. So we are, and we are working with Best Beginnings on early childhood, but, you know, one of our issues is can we bring in more funding to bring in more people? Collaborating across the three campuses is really big for us, and also working with organizations like Education Northwest so that we can have expertise and capacity broader than just within our center.
Okay, and I hope I don't violate protocol here, but before I came to session, I had a meeting with President Gamble, and it was supposed to only last an hour, and we were just talking fast as we could talk, and we still couldn't get it all out, and I really believe you have a visionary in President Gamble, and I was wondering if I could maybe call on you, sir, to just testify and give the committee, and I'll make sure the committee members that aren't here, an idea of where you see things going and how we could join your vision. I've heard some grumblings from your end of the world, so you must be shaking some few things up, sir. So if we don't have a lot of time left, but I really would like the committee to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, speaking of protocol, I was a visitor today, so I don't have my tie on. I apologize for that.
For the record, identify.
For the record, my name is Pat Gamble, and I'm the president of the University of Alaska System. Mm-hmm. I was listening with great interest and appreciation for the subject matter and the intensity of the intent of both the Senate and the House committees with regard to trying to move things forward. And it seems like sometimes the wheels are stuck in real sticky mud, and they either spin or we don't move forward. But there's a lot of energy from the motor trying to go through the transmission down to the wheels. We make a little bit of progress, but the idea that it's a system that interconnects and one side influences the other, it's a system problem as opposed to going after specific, that's real hard to get our arms around. And that's where the value of ICER comes in, because they can sit back and think about and look and take the data and explain how that system works. Unfortunately, in our FY13 budget, all their dollars were zeroed out. I don't know if you know that, but as were all the dollars for advising. We had the intention of starting our full system-wide advising program along the lines of what we talked about, Representative Seaton. We've got 35,000 students that need advising. We have a database need for each one of those students to know who they are, where they came from, what kind of courses they took in high school, how they did they do remedial, how did they do. And then you have to navigate the myriad of opportunities. It's like a three-dimensional chess game that you have to be able to take courses online at the same time you're going in the classroom to build your path to your degree through a fairly difficult and sometimes hard to grasp pathway that's full of minefields. And a lot of them are administrative, a lot of them are bureaucratic. So when we say credits transfer, they do transfer. We've got a book that says 97% of them transfer. We've got an entire list that a student can go on Blackboard, call them up, and see every single course that's online, and they can figure out which ones transfer. But the actual transfer itself is where we run into the problem. So when we say, do your credits transfer, and we say yes, and then we get all this anecdotal information that says, but it doesn't work, our effort, or what we call our strategic direction initiative, which is a major effort that we've undertaken now, and we're about 6 or 8 months into it, our effort is to try to use the data and the reports right out of the horse's mouth. I mean, we're talking to the students, we're talking to the faculty with these outreach meetings, some 40 or 50 of them across the state, including the communities, to find out what's the difference between what we think is going on and what we hear when we talk among ourselves, and then what's the real story out there from a student perspective. And the focus of this whole thing is to shift from input measurements to output measurements. For 10 years, the university has been looking at growing. It's been funded generously. It's built a number of new buildings. It's added a number of good new programs. But it's a different ballgame now. I mean, the guidance in the last 2 years has been to flatten budgets, and we certainly have. And so the only thing in our budget are those things that are we feel are absolutely the most necessary. One of them is this advising program. It impacts so many different parts of what we're doing with regard to getting a student through those first two critical years coming out of high school, when everything from homesickness to changing majors happens in that 2 years. Once you get through the first 2 years, things really smooth out. But the advising, changing majors, what courses will contribute to, as an elective, to your degree, and what won't. I mean, our students are so ill-informed, and it is so difficult for them to get information like that on a regular, quick, timely basis, that a lot of them don't look for that information. They go to a friend, they listen to their roommate, they make their own judgment calls, and then find out too late that, yeah, it's college credit, and it transferred, but it doesn't go to my degree. I mean, there's 100 stories in the big city like that, and they're all different. That's what we want to eliminate with SDI and advising, where the advisor is your personal navigator through this minefield, to the point where you get into your advanced classes, and then academic advising in the departments takes over. And that actually is pretty good. So the advising we're talking about, though, is it's not counseling. It's not behavior counseling like in high school. It is, how do I get through? And don't let me make mistakes that make me stay longer in school and cost me more money. We also need to hook the advisors up with the forecast for the job market in Alaska. We talked about our teachers. The latest data, I mean, it's sad. It really is. They start at the lowest level other than, I think, music and art are about the same starting salary as our teachers. Every other career field that you can think of starts at a higher starting level. With a master's degree, the average is the lowest of all the career fields across. I think even art and music actually bump up higher than teachers once they get the master's degrees in those fields. So a component which we don't talk about that's part of all this discussion about teachers really is pay. It really is pay. And those averages, of course, there's highs and lows all through the, and it gets complicated when you try to look at the eaches of all that. But the point being, though, pay is an issue, and it can't be disregarded. It's got to be somehow rolled in to the incentive, for example, to go to the bush. And you all talked about that very, very well. But the Strategic Direction Initiative was really born out of the institutional-wide look. We took a look at ourselves last year with a consultant that brought in a team called the Fisher Report. And this team has done probably 125 universities all over the country with names that you would recognize. And they came in and gave us a report. That was very helpful. We had a report on the system-wide staff that was done a couple years before that. Then we began to look at what was happening in the lower 48 with the universities who had their budgets cut in big ways. Because they were in a survival mode, they no longer had a debate about some of the initiatives that we're talking about here. They had to do it or else. And so they just sort of wiped the slate clean and started trying some things that we've only talked about. Very innovative things with regard to hooking up community colleges with the four-year programs, with regard to making sure that all the programs are 120 hours, 15 semester hours times 8 per semester, get out in 4 years, and on and on and on. Now, they're 3 or 4 years ahead of us. We are not in those dire straits at the present time. But what we do have is the advantage of looking and seeing how some of those initiatives are playing out now, because the data is coming back. And the data is quite clear, so that we can cherry pick in our strategic direction initiative those things that seem to be really moving the needle down in the lower 48, because they had to do it. Advising is one of the preeminent initiatives. It's clear. It's one of the preeminent initiatives. E-learning, as we call it, it used to be called distance learning. You know, the audit that we were doing on distance learning that we talked about, that audit is two computer generations old now. It's so ubiquitous through our whole system that it just isn't anything special anymore. Every student is getting online and using their computers, and it's almost becoming mixed in the classroom. When you talk to the students, and get the real skinny from the students, they're saying, well, professors actually mix online. Thank you. They'll mix online, even though it's not an online course. They can take advantage of online and actually speed the course up and do things online and in the classroom, and also help students who need makeup time, and so on and so forth. So it's everywhere. It's not even a separate subject anymore. The question is, how good can we get? But it also has brought on this need for advising, because there are so many choices now that the students have that they can make ill-advised choices. Our strategic direction initiative is designed to get our arms around what was in this review, what was in the talk about the staff, what are we hearing from the faculty, what are we hearing from our staff on these outreach meetings, more importantly, what are we hearing from our students? What's the hassle factor of being a student in our system? What hurdles can we remove to get you from here to there, particularly in the first 2 years? And we're reaching back at least 1 year into what we call the three critical years, senior year in high school, first 2 years of college credit, because that's where the action is, really. If we can get them thinking about college at the beginning of their senior year and actually let them play up so that they're on their game, the best they've ever been when they graduate and move into college, instead of taking that last year off because they're ahead, going through the summer, kicking back, and then all of a sudden walking into college and having that first math course or that first English course, writing habits are poor, and they get slam dunked. It's crushing, you know, to think that you're ready for college and then have somebody tell you you're not. Well, we don't want that to be happening. So what we're trying to do is go back that 1 year, and you heard about working with the school districts, looking at trying to align curriculum. And I'm talking about not the theoretical language that we write, but what does a math teacher say to a math teacher in high school from college saying, okay, let's sit down and figure out how we can get Johnny or Susie from there to there and make that transition as smooth as possible. And the final thing I'll say, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. and you said it really caught my attention the first time we met. One of the issues in the bush that is so important, I think, is what you call relevant curriculum. I've heard principals and superintendents in the bush talking about losing students in about the eighth or ninth grade, and they kind of glass over, and maybe it's because Columbus Sail the Ocean Blue doesn't have, you know, two trains left the station, have never seen a train. But the math and the physics of the river systems, of the birds that fly, of the things, that, the science that's all around them, that they learn by the time they're 12 or 13, as Don Bentz at APU told me one time in our committee that we met, he said, you know, I bring kids in from the outside, give them 2 years and give them a master's degree for the same thing that a 13-year-old coming out of the bush already knows, that he learned from his brothers and sisters and aunties and mom and dad. So relevant curriculum I think is going to be very, very important. That's a big step. It's the same math, it's the same physics, but it means something. And yet, the wickets you've got to go through to get something like that out across the board and then back into our teacher prep system, that's a big, bold step. But if we take that step and we're not afraid of it, I think it could make a huge difference. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. And
okay, we're running over. This is good. One comment, and then Representative Pruitt. But this is good stuff. I promise. If I hear grumbling from students, we'll have a conversation. But if I hear grumbling from the system, I'll just take it as a sign that maybe you're disrupting things a little bit and making it better for students. So that'll be my basic assumption, sir.
Well, I try to keep happy campers.
Yes.
But coming out of the military, it's every GI's right to grumble. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with grumbling. Sometimes it leads to solutions.
Representative Pruitt.
I'll make this quick since Chairman brought you up 5 minutes before what we were supposed to end here. I just have two comments that I want to make, and I really appreciate what you're doing, the initiative that you have with counseling. I know my experience in counseling when I went to UAA was, honestly, I'm surprised I actually did it in 4 years because I just kind of met my counselor towards the end and basically had him sign off on the thing. I went through it on my own. And, of course, my counselor, he was the head of the department, and our counseling sessions included me helping him clean his office. So so I had a different, it worked out for me. But my wife had the exact opposite. They signed off on her being able to graduate. She goes in to get a diploma. They say, what are you talking about? You can't graduate. You have another class to fulfill after she had it signed for. Now, I had to deal with the pregnant woman coming home telling me that they just told her she couldn't graduate and she had to continue with the course. So, I mean, obviously from my experience in the past is that we really had some, there were some struggles in that counseling. And if you think about the fact that these were just two experiences over the last few years, they weren't too complicated, and now you have kids that are dealing with some very complex arrangements in their schedule and whatnot. Yeah, it's really difficult. It can be difficult for these kids to navigate that. So I really appreciate the effort that you're putting into that. The one thing that I would just add is I've also had, and I've actually had some people come to me with some experiences where the catalogs have been changed, and they've had to... It's delayed them in the course of their of going to school, so it's added an additional year onto it, and I can understand the changes and at certain times where you might need to add a course, but I would just ask that maybe in the process of doing that we'd be cognizant, and I think we are. We're working through it, and the UAA in this case, a couple of them, because that's my constituency, and that happens to be most the kids that I've dealt with. They're working on it, so I'm not going to say that they're not taking care of the individuals, but it definitely gave some heartache to those people, feeling that it was going to delay them, feel that they're going to have to go for another year. Again, I think that goes into counseling some, but. I just kind of put that out there for you as we look at how we can make the education better for the kids, but also to make sure that they're on track to be able to be out there and ready on the workforce. I think you're on it, and I appreciate the work that you're doing, but I just thought I'd highlight those two issues for you. Thank you.
Really quick, Representative Seaton. See, we can't stop caring, you know.
Well,
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and you mentioned that the advisor monies had been cut out. I mean, we had a legislative task force that identified that as one of the primary things. You've identified it as one of the primary things for, completion of education. Was that cut out in Finance Committee? Was that cut out by the Regents? Was that cut out, didn't get included in the governor's budget? Where are we at, and do we have that proposal, or can we solicit that proposal from you? Because that's something that we have advocated in this committee and the task force, both of the task forces. So we don't want to get that piece left out now that we have a program developed.
Through the chair, we're a bit puzzled ourselves because I went back and read the committee recommendations. Our board completely supported the entire budget that we presented. I believe it represents a bit of a disconnect between the intent of the budget folks to bring in a flat budget. I mean, that's the guidance they've been given, and the intent of the legislature and the reports that we're talking about. I think they're kind of missing each other. We went back and looked at the transcripts from last year. House Finance clearly was in support of advising, and we had solid support from the legislature all the way through our budget last year, and the indications are we've got solid support this year. And so we were kind of puzzled, but we're also finding here over the last few days that several other legislators are kind of puzzled too as to why those things, if in fact they are legislative intent, were eliminated, I mean wholesale, right to the last penny, not only the general fund that we're asking for, but even the ability to take our own money and spend on these programs, that was zeroed out too. So we have our work cut out for us to try to do some missionary work to see if we can't reconnect the intent with the budget folks and see if we can get some of this back in. And actually, the dollars are quite small. We brought in a very, very tight budget this year. And our entire academic program portion of the budget, which was a 1.8% increment on a $350, $60 million budget, it was cut to 0.1%. 1.8% is pretty flat, given the size of the budget. It amounts in dollars to $6.1 million, would buy back every academic program we had in the budget. Including ICER and advising and everything else. So it's not a big hit, and we're hoping that we can kind of reconnect intent with our budget.
And just a follow-up. Uh-huh. So just to be clear, I mean, I'm on the K-12. I'm not on the university budget subcommittee, but I'm requesting that you forward us that information because we don't have – I mean, we get the budget as it was brought to us, and we need to see the program and all of those things. So from the legislative standpoint, I'm requesting that you forward to us that programmatic piece, and especially the advisor piece, so that we have something to work from.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, President Gamble. I believe you're a true visionary. Thank you.
It's outputs that count, though.
Yeah, okay,
there's a fine line between vision and hallucination.
I believe we can also get it done. Okay, my script says, seeing no further questions, I'm sorry. Seeing we're totally out of time, we'll meet again Friday at 8 o'clock this morning with the House Finance Subcommittee on Education, hear about education funding from school district perspective. I went to a LASBO and said, prove to us you're not wasting the money. So they're going to come and give us the proof in the pudding.